Radio Free Alaska. Welcome to Radio Free Alaska, the voice of freedom, broadcast in an unfree world. Broadcasting from an undisclosed location in an undisclosed location overlooking the middle of nowhere. We're so glad you can join us today on Radio Free Alaska. Today is February 21st, 2023. And today we're going to discuss the address to the Russian nation made by President Vladimir Putin, who brought forth a very detailed explanation of what is happening in Ukraine, and more importantly, discussed the battle that is taking place throughout the world. And it's a very interesting perspective that is coming out of Russia, and we want to take a look at that today in order to bring our take on his comments. And also to share with you what we consider to be the most alarming aspects of this particular address. Now, this address was a highly formal affair in Russia, and it was done at the highest levels of statecraft. The top Chinese diplomat was in Moscow for the statement and did, in fact, attend the broadcast. And Vladimir Putin addressed what was happening in Ukraine and the reason for Russia's entry into Ukraine. It's important for us to know this history because some of the background that goes into what's taking place and what is now a real deathbed in Ukraine, a place of destruction and dying at an unprecedented level, at least since World War II. And we are told in the West that it was an unprovoked aggression by the Russians to enter into Ukraine. But this is absolutely disingenuous. The truth is that Ukraine had leadership that was democratically elected. And it was a democratic election that reflected the diversity of the Ukrainian population. The Ukrainian population is made up primarily of two people, although there are more like three or four that are in the nation. You have the Russian-speaking Ukrainians who live in the eastern section of the country. You have Ukrainian-speaking Ukrainians who live in the vast center and the western part of the country. And there are also Romanian speakers, and Hungarians in the western portion of Ukraine. In fact, three oblasts are primarily Hungarian. And even in the far west, you see a heavy Polish influence all the way into Lviv. But central Ukraine, we're talking about from Kiev to Odessa, from Lviv to Nikolaev. These areas are all occupied by Ukrainian-speaking Ukrainians. And the government then had a responsibility to represent a diverse group of people. It would be kind of like, the United States having an obligation to represent the Deep South and its dialects, as well as the West Coast of the United States and its dialects. Same kind of thing. There was also a heavy Jewish population in Ukraine. And so once 2014 occurred, the Obama administration, Joe Biden, vice president, and Victoria Nuland, working on behalf of the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, engaged in an overt coup d'etat in Ukraine, notwithstanding the objections of the EU. It was done in order to secure a number of things. The most important thing for the leadership in the United States at that time was to create a situs whereby money could be laundered, and massive amounts of money. And in addition to laundering money, the approach was to use Ukraine as the tip of the spear to push NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, farther and farther into former Soviet space. The desire, the expressed desire of NATO, was to make Ukraine a nuclear station to threaten Russia with American short-range nuclear weapons. Russia was aware of this, but said little, and they began to protest, say, well, you really can't do that. They didn't launch a strong enough protest about the most obvious coup d'etat in violation of all international laws, particularly the first page of the UN Charter, to which the United States is a signatory, by engaging in an overthrow of an existing government by staging a civil war. The civil war was very violent in Ukraine in 2014. It's called Maidan. This is the name of the square in downtown Kyiv, Maidan. And at Maidan, there were professional snipers that were paid to shoot civilians and government employees. And it was the U.S. State Department that was paying these snipers using counterfeit $100 bills that were being produced in Germany by Victoria Nuland's husband. And so this money was being floated into Ukraine to pay mercenaries, and these mercenaries were killing anyone and everyone as needed in order to effect an overthrow of the existing president in Ukraine and establish a puppet regime that would be compliant with the desires of the American CIA. And so this puppet regime was installed, and those Ukrainians who were part of diverse political parties, including the Party of Regions and others, that were favoring democratic processes and were willing to live under even disparate leadership that was democratically elected, they began to be persecuted by the rising political movement, almost all of which was Nazi in character. The Azov group, openly Nazi, wearing Nazi chevrons, Nazi emblems, many of its members tattooing swastikas on their arms. The Svobodna group, Nazi group, the Banderites, worshiping Stepan Bandera, who was a Nazi sympathizer responsible for the Jewish Holocaust in Ukraine during World War II. And also the Right Sector. So you had Svobodna, Right Sector, and Azov, that even the U.S. Congress recognized that Azov was a Nazi battalion and refused to fund the Ukrainian political machine because of its affiliation to known Nazi groups. Now, the Nazification of Ukraine started in 2014, but became more and more intense as the years went by. The Nazis began to seize control of the local police. And even the day after the regime was overthrown, the new regime in Kyiv published a demand that all Jews must register in writing. And this demand was floated throughout the whole Luhansk and Donbass, the Donetsk region, and Crimea. But Crimea had many, many Jews living there, Russian-speaking Jews, as well as some 24,000 Jews living in Odessa. And so these Jews became very fearful, given that it was just a mere 70 years ago that over a million Jews were slaughtered in this very country by the parents of the Banderites, who were now in control of the government once again. And so a vote was taken in the Crimea, and or what they call Krim, and the people of the Crimea voted overwhelmingly. I mean, something like 98% of those who voted favored rejoining Russia. And so this was accomplished in 2014. The Ukrainian political machine had no military to speak of at that point to try to recapture the Crimea from Russia. And so Russia took it and maintained its bases solidly there at Sevastopol, and began to hold and maintain its control over the Black Sea. Well, the Russian-speaking people that remained in what they call the Donbass, which is an eastern area of Ukraine, consisting of Luhansk and Donetsk, these people began to be targeted by the Nazi regimes, first in a rogue way, where Azov members and Svobodna members and Right Sector members would simply go and persecute Russian-speaking people in the Donbass region. And so the people of Donbass voted to secede from Ukraine. And there was a reason for this, because Ukraine had told them, we're going to criminalize the Russian language, we're going to criminalize the Russian culture, we're going to criminalize the Russian Orthodox beliefs, and you can get out and leave your property and your money behind. Well, most of them had no place to go and had no means to leave. And so both of these oblasts declared independence from Ukraine, and this became known as the Donbass. Once they declared independence from Ukraine, the Ukrainian army began shelling the cities of the Donbass, particularly targeting residential buildings, hospitals, and schools, and persecuting anyone who was a Russian speaker. And so if you arrived in Kyiv and you could not speak Ukrainian, but were speaking Russian, and for us, we can't tell the difference, but they certainly can, they would persecute that person. They would beat them. They would take them and out to the dump and threaten to blow their head off. They would steal their companies. They would steal their papers. And the police were complicit with this. And this began to intensify during the tenure of Donald Trump, who began to put armament, NATO armament, into Ukraine. And the idea was to build up an army to retake the Crimea from Russia. Well, while this was going on, the Russians sought a peace agreement with the West, and they caused Ukraine to sign an agreement called the Minsk Agreement. Minsk is the capital of Belarus, and this is where the agreement was signed. And in this agreement, Ukraine agreed to respect the independence of the Donbass and to give them a discrete mechanism whereby they could self-govern as an autonomous region of Ukraine. However, since then, the Ukrainian government, Poroshenko, and Angela Merkel, who was the prime minister of Germany during this period, openly admitted that they lied about the Minsk Agreement. The only reason they signed it was to buy time to build an army. And an army they did build, and it was all NATO-trained, NATO-funded, and NATO-deployed. And NATO spent the next 10 years, or the next 8 years, learning the battleground, deploying thousands of tanks, pieces of artillery, and armored personnel carriers, and aircraft, and et cetera, with the idea that they were going to completely destroy the Russian-speaking people in the Donbass. In fact, when asked Ukrainians, what should we do with the Russian-speakers in the Donbass, the answer was, eliminate them. And so there were 14,000 dead civilians in this region coming up into 2022. And Ukraine had amassed troops at the behest of the direction of Liz Truss in the UK and Boris Johnson, and at the behest of Joe Biden, who immediately upon taking office in the United States, elected to push the State Department and the Department of Defense into wartime footing with Russia under the idea that NATO was going to expand permanently into Ukraine and that Russia was going to be divided into 11 nations and its natural resource wealth raped. Well, Russia immediately saw this and did everything it could to head off this destruction of Russian-speaking people in the Donbass. And they began telling NATO, don't do it. We don't want you to do this. We want you to stop. This is a red line for us. Ukraine cannot become a NATO country. You signed a document in 1991, said you would never expand into a former Soviet nation, yet you have already expanded into Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, portions of Georgia, and now you're attempting to expand into Ukraine in violation of your own agreement, in violation of your own writing, and we're not going to allow it. We cannot allow you to enter into Ukraine and to turn Ukraine into a nuclear power with the capability of striking Moscow with nuclear weapons in 5 minutes. NATO's response was, shut your mouth and don't tell us what to do. So as a consequence, after 3 months of pleading, the Russians entered into the Donbass region, not with a significant number of troops, actually, but with a small body of troops, and they began to address the formidable array of NATO weapons and a formidable Ukrainian army in the Donbass region. Since that has happened, there has been a bloodbath in Ukraine of substantial proportion. The Wagner PMC estimates that they have killed 110,000 Ukrainian troops, but the total Ukrainian casualties are probably around 250,000 dead and about another 350,000 wounded and injured and incapable of fighting again. There are mass graveyards all over Ukraine. The death rate has been about 10 to 1, 10 Ukrainians for every Russian dead. There have been many Russian casualties, but the Russians consider this an existential threat to Russia. And Russia's primary reason for resisting Western incursions is, number one, they want to retain the territorial integrity of their nation and to hold their nation state together. And two, and Vladimir Putin addressed this very clearly, he said, marriage is between a man and a woman, and a family consists of a man and a woman and their children. And the West is completely opposed to this notion. The West is now engaged in everything but a standard biblical marriage and have raised doctrines that are anti-scriptural and totally opposed to traditional Russian values. These values presupposed communism by 700 years. So when you look at what's happening, Putin was saying, look, we are not a people that are going to go along with the LGBT agenda, with transgendering our children, with destroying the family. This is absolutely anathema to Russia's plan. Now, he went on to say that the West's deception was tested before, and the West cannot wash away from their shame. The West, you know, when we talk about what has happened under U.S. leadership, particularly under the leadership when the Scherf family was in control of the U.S. presidency, that would be George H.W. Bush, from about 1986 until the present time. You can see that the Scherf family, which were always Nazi, in fact, Prescott Bush, the father of George H.W. Bush, was indicted for funding the Nazi Party through Union Bank during World War II and was in fact convicted of it before he became a U.S. senator. The Scherf family, there's pictures of the Scherfs sitting in their home in Germany, where they left Germany to come to the United States. George H.W. Bush sitting in the same room with Martin Bormann and with Richard Galen and with Otto Skorzynski and with Joseph Mengele, of all people, personal friends of the Bush family. When George Scherf took on an American name, he took on the name George Herbert Walker Scherf. Herbert Walker was the man who owned Auschwitz. Karl Rovner was the grandfather of Karl Rove, who designed and was the architect of Auschwitz. These are important things to know because the Nazis were in control of the United States from 1988 forward under the Bush presidency. And on September 11th, 1991, H.W. Bush announced the New World Order. This New World Order we're now seeing in its full ripeness is what's upon the world today. And so the Russians have been resistant to this, and the Russians have watched since George H.W. Bush took power as the West went into battle in Iraq, claiming weapons of mass destruction when there were none, went into Serbia and Kosovo in order to establish a Muslim camp, militant camp, in the middle of the Balkans and to Balkanize what used to be Yugoslavia, what used to be a United Nation, and completely destroy it. The Arab Spring, which saw the United States move against Tunisia, Libya, Algeria, Sudan, Egypt, Somalia, Yemen, etc. And another incursion into Iraq, 20-year war in Afghanistan, and the random bombing of the nation of Syria, when there was no attempt by any of those nations mentioned to ever affect an American interest anywhere on the stage. And so there have been 38 million refugees and millions of casualties, not to mention those who have died from the depleted uranium that was being used in Iraq and in Afghanistan and in Syria. The United States directly funded ISIS, created and funded ISIS. John McCain primarily is the one that was responsible for that creation. And these were people that were taken out of prison and turned into radical terrorists on of the American payroll. What's left of ISIS is currently fighting as mercenaries in Ukraine, again on the American payroll. The American payroll included all of Al-Qaeda that was shooting at American troops in Baghdad. Hillary Clinton moved 12 million pounds of weapons into Benghazi, Libya, and then shipped them through Turkey to ISIS. And when this was discovered, the ambassador was systematically eradicated in Benghazi, Libya. So you can see that the way that stands right now, the Nazi regime that has been controlling the executive branch of the United States government has been engaged in consistent and nonstop war crimes, crimes against humanity, violations of the Geneva Code, violations of the United States, United Nations Charter, violation of the Declaration on Human Rights and the Covenants on Human Rights, violation of the Universal Declaration on Bioethics and Human Rights. All of this is what is happening. So Vladimir Putin said, look, here's what's going to happen. We're going to bow out of the Strategic Weapons Treaty, the START Treaty, the Strategic Weapons Reduction Act that provided for mutual observance of the new weapons programs of both countries with American observers walking through Russian bases and Russian observers walking through American bases. However, the Russians no longer believe any word that comes out of any American's mouth because the Americans have violated every agreement they've ever made with anybody ever. And the word on a piece of paper means absolutely nothing to the American regime because, after all, they're Nazis. And Nazis reserve unto themselves the right to lie because the ends justify the means. And the ends have to be absolute authoritarian power in the hands of small, mustached, demented individuals. So this is what the situation is. And so Russia said, well, look, we're going to bow out of the START Treaty and we're going to begin nuclear bomb testing. And so the nuclear tests are going to begin in short order, and you're going to see some very large Russian nuclear weapons being tested, probably in the Arctic Ocean. In the meantime, the Russians have geared up with the mass production of hypersonic missiles, and they've got a breed of four different kinds of hypersonic missiles, including the Zircon and the Kinzhal and the Sarmat. And these weapons are extremely fast, travel anywhere between 12 and 14,000 miles an hour. They're unstoppable by any American or any European anti-ballistic missile system. And one of the missiles then in particular that they're going to be mass producing is designed specifically to take out all Western anti-ballistic missile systems. Now, as we talked about before on the show that we just did with Jesse on eating wild honey and locusts with Mark Steele, we discussed the issue of the American troops being vaccinated with a jab that includes nanobots, which creates a magnetic antenna. This exposes American troops to be assassinated by a high-powered microwave broadcast. In other words, a 61 megahertz frequency broadcast from a satellite to the position of the troops can kill the entire deployed force. This is as a result of the ridiculous idea that everyone needed to be vaccinated. So the American troops are radically exposed. And I'm not going to get into troop deployment or armament deployment, but suffice it to say that Joe Biden has the intent of moving a substantial body of U.S. troops and armament directly into Ukraine. Such a move, the Russians have made it very, very clear, such a move will immediately make them targets for Russian weapons. And the Russians, of course, have said, we will use tactical nuclear weapons. Should the Russians use tactical nuclear weapons, it's very possible that they will follow those or may go commensurate with the use of strategic nuclear weapons, including the Sarmat-2. The Sarmat-2 is a 15 warhead, largest ICBM ever built, 20,000 kilometer range ICBM that carries 15 150 kiloton nuclear warheads that is unstoppable by any anti-ballistic missile system in the world. And this one ICBM is capable of totally destroying the British Isles, totally destroying the American East Coast, totally destroying the state of Texas. It has this kind of capability, a massive, most powerful weapon ever built. They're also going into mass production on the Poseidon, which is the most powerful nuclear torpedo ever built, capable of putting 600-foot waves onto the coastline just by merely detonating this bomb. So the Russians have engaged into a total war footing. They're in massive production of weaponry. The United States is planning on gearing up to almost 100,000 artillery shells a month. The Russians are currently manufacturing 1.4 million artillery shells per month, to give you an idea of the difference. Another key feature to bear in mind, too, for those of you that are interested, the Russians are now going to arm Iran with nuclear weapons, and these are going to be hypersonic nuclear weapons. So initially, they will probably place Iskanders, Kinzhals, and Zircons in Iran. And when they said they're going to do that, that means it's probably already happened. And so Israel should take notice that Iran has unstoppable hypersonic nuclear missiles, and they're most assuredly pointed at Israel. The Iranians are also buying some 64 Su-35s, one of the most advanced fighters in the world. Israel got stuck with that dead bomb, the F-35, which is a complete waste of money and a tragic, tragic mistake on the part of the U.S. Defense Department. So the main things that I want you to take away from Vladimir Putin's address are, number one, Russia is resistant to the LGBT agenda and the moral defilement and demoralization of its nation, and intends to re-embrace biblical standards. And in fact, he used the phrase the holy book, talking about what will be the guide governing the Russian society, particularly when it comes to marriage and the family. Russia is resistant to any change along those lines. Russia will completely resist the NATO aspects of Ukraine. Biden is insistent that Ukraine will become a NATO member. Russia will simply not tolerate that. And instead, any armament that's placed in Ukraine is going to be destroyed. Of all the tanks and armament that's been placed in Ukraine so far, it's almost all been wrecked. The Russians have taken out 7,900 tanks and armored vehicles since the war began, and over 4,000 pieces of artillery. So this is going to continue to be an escalatory event, and it's going to continue to be a punishing event. And one thing I want to leave you with before I go, remember that this war in Ukraine under Biden's leadership is exhausting the military resources of Western Europe. Britain is down to 2 days of ammunition. Germany's down to 1 week. Most of the tanks are gone. Most of the aircraft are gone. Most of the artillery are gone. There is little left for Western Europe to defend itself should Ukraine fall. And should Ukraine fall, then Western Europe will be facing a 2 million man Russian army, fully experienced, all the troops in the field, in full production of massive arms behind it. Keep that in mind. Okay, thanks for joining us today on Radio Free Alaska. We hope to see you tomorrow. And Thursday, again, we take up the reading of Tusk. Radio Free Alaska, broadcasting the voice of freedom in an unfree world.